All right, this is Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ SSD. And so this show, I went to the RNC in Milwaukee, and basically for the left, it was a nothing burger. It was kind of a trial run for me. My train ended there. It was a fiasco of planes without any automobiles. I was trying not to use any automobiles. So I was constantly on public transport this time, which I've tried to do, tried to be low on the carbon footprint. But I hadn't scheduled to get there until the evening of the first day of the RNC. So I would have missed the main event, the main demonstration on that day anyway. But as it was, I was late. 9 hours late because of the train. Because for those of you who don't know, both Greyhound and Amtrak are subsidized by the U.S. government, so it's just ridiculous how we should definitely be spending much more money on rail and mass transit. And in a way, the airlines are subsidized by the government too. But I could do a whole show on that because airports, you know, are basically paid for by the taxpayer instead of the airports, the airlines. But all that is why travel is so cheap. But you shouldn't really be using an airplane for commuting to work and things like that, in my opinion. But airplanes, you know, and we could definitely use blimps, and there's all kinds of other transport things. You know, if you use helium instead of hydrogen in a blimp, they work just fine. So there's all kinds of other ways that we could do travel that we just don't, because no one will invest in that. All right, so let me give you. So I'm going to give you some highlights from the RNC. I also went to Chicago, and I went to several open mics too. And you'll hear my. What happened was, so they did speeches on the first day, and the city set up a speech plaza. The ACLU had to sue the city to allow to get people close enough that their speeches would have any impact at all. So instead, what they did was hire a third party. What I was told was that a third party was hired to manage a free speech, two free speech areas. And then there was a guy that you'll hear that just set up in front of the conservative free speech area. They had their own free speech area too, in front of one of the entrances. And he... there was a black guy that had a sign out and was getting some interviews by several. Every time I rode by there or walked by there, he was getting interviewed by some different media, including worldwide media. So I cut in on this one lady from Scandinavia that was interviewing him and got a little bit on abortion. You know, because I can't believe Donald Trump has not had an abortion or caused an abortion or had been related to an abortion in his lifetime. But I have no evidence of that whatsoever. But anyway, so you'll hear. So the free speech, this guy was set up the whole time in front of one of the entrances without a permit. And then the liberal media, the liberal speakers, activists all had two free speech plazas that were run by a third party hired by the city. So what happened was is nobody showed up after they did their thing on the first day. And I heard they did it on the morning of the second day, and then no one showed up. So on the third day, I said, the heck with it, I'll go down there and make a speech myself and use part of my comedy routine is a political comedy routine. So I kind of mixed stuff in with that. And what happened was I showed up at and they had an opening right then. So I really didn't have much time to prepare. I had prepared on the bus on the way there a little bit, but all my notes were on my phone and whatever instead of having them organized. So, but I still pulled it off. So, what else I want to do for you is, so I'll give you some highlights of the RNC, and then I study sustainability, as those of you listen know. And so I want to give you my take on, the various stops that I made and what the housing was like and the transport and things like that and sustainability and the various cities that I stopped at, which was, Denver, Milwaukee, and, Chicago. So, as well as San Francisco on the way back. So, and of course, I got caught up in the CrowdStrike hack was delayed. My flight from Chicago to San Francisco was delayed, so I missed my transition to Eugene. So I spent a couple of days in San Francisco, but was not able to. Unfortunately, all the open mics there were closed on the days that I was there. So, yeah, what happened was basically it was a nothing burger. There were no speeches, but there had to be at least 12 different types of police there around the site. I walked around and got a scooter, electric scooter, zipped around there between the two sites. And, you know, every time I turned around, there was a different type of security, including what looked like the Secret Service or some kind of major security. You know, the guys in suits with sunglasses and communicating somehow on their glasses, I think. And I swear everybody but the dog catcher and the truant officer, but every time I turned around, there was some different uniform, different motorcycles. Some guys were on these giant Harleys. There were police on giant Harleys, and then there were just the plain old little moto guzzies or whatever they use. Two different types of motorcycles. The boat, several times when I crossed the bridge over to the Haymarket Free Speech Plaza, the boat of police was going under the bridge, so they were patrolling that river that goes next to the Faisal Arena, or whatever it's called. I call it the Fisting Arena. And so, yeah, plenty of delegates around while I was walking around, all, you know, in power suits, including the women. Many women down there, power-suited women with lanyards of various colors and badges. And so I went into a bar to get a drink because there's nothing you can do there but drink there. Even there's really nothing to see in Milwaukee except it's a brewery town. And they tell me even Harley Davidson has moved away from Milwaukee. So I went in and had a beer, and there was a delegate there in a blue suit with a red tie. And before I could ask him anything, the sheriff came in. I don't know whether he was looking for me or what, but they just came in to check the place. And so I kind of bailed and didn't interview him, but I don't think he would have given me an interview anyway. And but he got into a conversation with the bartender who owned the bar was saying, and I didn't get his permission. But maybe I'll replay that in the future. But he was talking about they were having street parties outside, which is people buying their own beer instead of paying the high price for a bar and having a party in the street. So he was against that, and it was kind of taking business away from his bar or causing a hassle for his bar. So, yeah, so then I left there, and let's see. When I was in Denver, I went to an open mic there, and it was in a bad part of town with these beautiful, you know, what I call craftsman-style houses. And so this, it was in this guy's backyard. But across the street, there was... I waited for the open mic across the street, and I sat... It was a brand-new building. And I looked... I went to the other side of the building, and it's commercially mixed building with residentials. And it had this little tiny... what looked like a back door porch that I was sitting on the steps, and I guess this guy's dog was barking, and he came out and asked me if I was okay, wondering if I was a homeless person out there, and which was nice that he didn't just throw me off his stoop. He actually checked to see, young guy in his 20s, actually checked to see, you know, if I was okay, rather than just calling the cops on me. But this is a brand new building right across from these rundown ghetto type buildings, and this is what the type of gentrification they're doing. The Motel 6, too, you could tell that I stayed at. And a word on Motel 6, apparently they've been bought out by Blackstone, but I used to like Motel 6 because they owned their own properties, but now I'm not so sure anymore. And of course, you know, the whole hotel thing is they're just paying as little money. Nothing works in the hotels anymore because they're trying to get as much money out of you as they can with as little, just like any rental, putting as little money into it as they can. But you could tell this building had been there. I don't know how long Motel 6 had owned it, but I think they probably owned it from the beginning. But it was a brick building that was there, just like these other buildings, from the 40s or whatever, 50s. And then, but all around there is little mini malls that are brand new. These are just like these corporate businesses that have dropped down and paved stuff over and put these little oases of corporate greed companies, in my opinion, in the middle of these poor neighborhoods. So there was a Trader Joe's there, which is an expensive grocery store in the middle of basically a rundown area of Milwaukee. And so I would take the bus downtown from the Motel 6 in Glendale, Milwaukee, downtown. And when I'd go through the, and this happens every town I'm in, I've noticed this for whatever, 50 years now of taking the bus, there's no white people on the bus. The only white people on there are usually mentally ill, or in LA now people take the train to go to the hockey game is the only white people on the bus. So, and the other thing that happened is when you're going through this neighborhood near Glendale, you can tell it's a wealthy neighborhood. And what they've done is it looks to me like they've taken houses and rebuilt houses in these modern colonial style. These aren't colonial styles and Tudors and stuff like that. The wealthier houses, some with round turrets on them made out of brick and stuff like that, like the Hamptons, a Hampton style house. And it looks to me like those are brand new houses. Those aren't restored houses. They've torn houses down. And in this rich neighborhood, no one gets on the bus there. And then as soon as you get a little closer to downtown, you pass through the poorer neighborhoods, then the people start getting on the bus. So, and I observed this in every town. Chicago, too, was there was a gang fight on the L, and I've been riding the subway in L.A., for instance, and lived in Watts, and I've never seen a gang fight on the train where I think a Hispanic or Latino guy wouldn't give up his seat to these black guys. So they started hauling, punching at them, and everyone on the train, mostly black people, moved away from it. I stood there because I'm older, and I'm sitting there going, I don't know whether I should help this guy. And no one, including me, helped the guy. But, you know, you're afraid you're going to be stabbed or something, but there's cameras on the train. So I don't understand what these guys are thinking, that they're not going to get caught. But somebody pulled the thing to stop the train, and everybody got off the train, and then the gang members got off the train, and everybody got back on the train. So, and you know, Chicago is notorious for Caprini Green. And I went to an open mic there at the Veterans, really good, really cool open mic that I'll play you the music, the band. They had a band there that played you on and off the stage. And he did a really great set, really great guitarist, whose name they never said. So I can't get you, I'll get you his name maybe in the future and play it in the future, but it's kind of really cool music. So what I notice on my way, I walking to the open mic, first of all, there was an open mic where 60 people showed up in the wealthy area, and they're almost all white guys in the wealthy area of Chicago, whose neighborhood I won't mention. But I couldn't get on that mic because 60 people showed up, and you know, they picked their friends on the mics, which is cool. Although I would have stayed, you know, and watched you if you let me on your mic. But anyway, another day I was walking to this veterans hall, and you can tell what they've done is they have the row houses, which are really cool, but you can tell they've just rebuilt all the row houses and kind of gentrified the area. And so what I want to say about that is, you know, there's two ways you can do it. So then there's Caprini Green, where they basically, you don't want to warehouse people. That's just basically an open air prison. Not really open air, but it's just a giant prison that you can, you know, you have visiting rights. You can go to the store and stuff. And so that's what Caprini Green was these giant buildings that they just warehoused people. And it had to be subsidized by the government. So then the other choice is to have these small areas with, you know, with parks near them. Because Jefferson originally wanted the country to be little, everybody had their own little farm. So you can't do that because there's not enough land to do that. And you can't put everybody in a box, in a giant box, because that's basically a prison that you don't have any resources or any fun area to have anything. You're just living. And then there's these little row houses that are only two stories that are all packed tightly next to each other like they have in New York. And then you have a park that you go to. So there's got to be some medium thing in there. What I advocate is where I grew up in L.A., for instance, there was called Rainforest on the end of Laurel Canyon and Stone Canyon, too, not on my street that I lived on. But they all had a common area behind the house that everybody monitored, too. You know, you're because you live there, you monitor this area. You always know who's in that area because all the houses surround this open area. So to me, that's the way, you know, we need to. The population rate is down, thank God. And I keep hearing stories on NPR of how terrible it is that the population rate, the birth rate is down. But we want less people, first of all. But there's got to be a way to have large buildings, you know, several stories high so that we can get plenty of housing for people and have them unique enough so that you're not in a prison and have open space that you can go to have some fun, have your kids play and play in a secure area and have shopping that you can walk to and don't have to take a car. My dad used to loan money. He was a loan officer for home savings and loan, where he would loan money on tracts of houses. And he was all for the satellite, what you call the satellite city, which is basically like Disneyland, where you have frontier land and all these different lands, you know, that you have to drive your car to. So you have to drive to shopping and drive to municipal stuff. Instead of keeping all that in one area, in the same area, you want your living space and your play space and your commons all together is the idea. And it's very difficult, I gotta say, it's very difficult to do, especially with the overpopulation and people having kids indiscriminately. All right, so there's my speech. Let's see, Caprini Green is, apparently there's a, I thought they tore that down long ago, but, and apparently there's actually a mini-series about Caprini Green, so if you want to know more about that. But again, you don't warehouse, we want row houses. We want yards versus parks, and we want height versus population. There's a whole ratio between warehousing and row houses because of the population, the high population, and how much yard space you can have versus common park spaces. Personally, I'd like to have, you know, my own garden where I grow my own food and stuff like that in a 2, 3, 4-story, 5-story house, rooftop gardens, rooftop solar. And again, there's this height versus population. We need to keep the heights down and not have warehouses, but keep the population down too. All right, so that's my report on the RNC nothing burger for the liberals, very effective for the conservatives, and the gentrification and non-gentrification and the sustainability of housing in each of these areas. All right, so coming up, like I say, I got this guy a little briefly about anti-abortion from this guy that was outside the RNC bravely by himself. I'm not one black, two black guys got killed. And while I was sitting on the bus, a black guy told me, you know, that it was the Ohio sheriff that killed him. Whereas if you had, you know, we don't want police. We wouldn't need police if we had social justice in this country and everybody had a decent income. And like I say, your architecture was sustainable. We wouldn't need police, but because there were so many different types of police, the Milwaukee police, who might have known the guy that was brandishing a couple of knives, and the Ohio police shot him, according to this guy on the bus stop. So I hope that this guy wasn't one of the black people that was shot. This guy that was in front of the RNC talking about how women should not vote for Trump because of his anti-abortion stance. So you'll hear from him, and then you'll hear the music I recorded at the Chicago VFW during at the open mic night. And you'll hear my speech that to no one that I did at the RNC in front of at the Haymarket Free Speech Plaza. All right, thanks for listening. Tell your friends, support independent media. This is an interview I walked up on with a black man standing in between the conservative free speech area and one of the entrances to the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, July 16th. He had been interviewed by several media outlets.
Because he don't like women. I don't see how any woman could vote for him. Not one woman in America should never vote for Donald Trump. Not one. Because he's a, you know what I'm saying, a chauvinist, and he's trying to tell women what to do with their body. You cannot tell a person what to do with their own body. And that's what he's trying to do. You
know?
Yes, because they are some idiots, that's right. The idiots. They tell them they are some idiot, all women. Shouldn't no woman vote for Donald Trump? No woman. No woman. No woman or man. I hope you don't vote for him.
I can't vote
for him. Okay, okay, because you're not coming. Okay. Okay. Gotcha.
But thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Maybe I'll see you later.
Okay.
Have a good day.
I'm with a Low Power FM in Eugene, Oregon. Can I ask you some questions?
Oh, man.
Everybody's been interviewing you.
Huh? I know. I think I'm kind of tired. I'm thirsty. I got cotton mouth and everything.
For KEPW News, I'm DJ Susti.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate you guys helping. You're working me in. I know. But you guys got nothing to do anyway. All right, I'm DJ Susti. I'm running for president. My platform, what I'm trying to do is call attention to the Equal Rights Amendment that we've been trying to pass for 50 years that still has not been enacted, the Equal Rights Amendment, trying to get at least the other candidates to acknowledge that we need the Equal Rights Amendment passed. And I just had a recent heart attack. I've had a pacemaker put in. So what I'm pledging to, I'm looking for an alphabet running mate, and I'm pledging to die in office. Because apparently that's the only way we can get an alphabet or a young alphabet person in office. So I've already negotiated a contract with an agreement with Big Porn. They will stop making pornography. If we solve the world's problems, and I've made the same offer to Ben Affleck, Justin Bieber, and Dick Cheney. If they stop making pornography, if we solve the world's problems, maybe they'll stop making pornography too. I'm anti-corporate, and I'm kind of winging it here because they put me on at the last minute. So I've witnessed I've studied corporate malfeasance I was at the WTO in 1999, and I've watched the outsourcing of jobs. The reason China is an issue right now, China still has, even though they have human rights violations, they still have most favored nation status. And so we need to remove China's most favored nation status. The reason we vote in authoritarian dictators is because at the end of World War I, Germany, they ruined the German economy because they made them, the elites that were all cousins of one another that ran World War I, made the German economy pay for World War I, and that ruined the German economy, and that's why the Nazis came to power. And this has happened over and over again with other authoritarian regimes. So the same with NAFTA. I watched them sign NAFTA, and Atros Perot was right. Our jobs were sucked right down to they sucked all our jobs and outsourced all our jobs to NAFTA. The people that are coming over the border, this is also another thing that happens worldwide, is to try to stop immigration, when what's really happening is corporate exploitation in especially Central and South America, these people are seeking, are refugees from corporate malfeasance and corporate overreach and corporate and outsourcing our jobs to corporations in Central and South America. That's why they're coming up here. If we were to, and corporations actually get tax breaks for going down there and ruining people's ruining the economies down there when they should be staying up here and keeping small businesses up here, small business jobs up here. There was a guy named Lou Ruckhauser who wrote a book called What's Next for the Economy back in the 80s, and what he was talking about is taxing behavior that you want to avoid, that you want to stop, and using that money to encourage businesses and business styles that you want to encourage using those tax dollars. We should be taxing multinational corporations. My platform is an extractive corporations tax. I would tax corporations heavily and use that money to come up with non-extractive practices that are that involve small businesses, similar to, I'm not totally against capitalism, I'm in favor of small-scale capitalism, similar to E.F. Schumacher's Small is Beautiful, if you read that. We should have small businesses and our government. That's what a laissez-faire, that's what a laissez-faire government is supposed to do. It's laissez-faire, it doesn't mean don't regulate at all. Laissez-faire is supposed to stop anyone from dominating the market and encourage small businesses so that there's competition, so that the consumer has a choice of where they're gonna buy, where they're gonna buy stuff, and you're not gonna buy from all one people, all one person. No one should have a yacht, no one should have a rocket to the moon. They should be taxed and spread that money around. There should be no, there should be one class of people with a little bit of conspicuous consumption. And but nobody should go homeless while other people are launching themselves into space and taking yacht rides and owning more than one home. You shouldn't own, like Pierre-Joseph Proudhon said, you shouldn't have owned more property than you really need to survive. So I've also been doing the open mics. I do a comedy routine of open mics that's a little political. So NATO's in the news. NATO has been, it's the 75-year anniversary of NATO. To join NATO, countries are required to buy weapons from other NATO countries. Isn't that just the old mafia protection racket, the old mafia insurance scam? Look, you got a really nice country here. I wouldn't want to see anything happen to it. Wouldn't want you to end up like your neighbor over there was Hiristan. So Theresa May is no longer the Prime Minister of England. She got up there one day and said, let's seize the assets of the Russian oligarchs that are sitting in the Bank of England. Well, hold on there, Peter Brett. Hold on there. Wait a minute, Mitigator of Gaul, Merchant of the Maidenhead, Duchess of Destabilization. You mean to tell me you just let the Russian oligarchs take the money they stole from the Russian people, put it in the Bank of England, and gave them a free toaster and waive service charges if they use the online app, and said, pip, pip, cheerio, Bob's your uncle, have a nice day. They shat her out of there faster than a British burrito supreme. You can't be telling people that the Bank of England is the biggest money launderer in history. Ixnay on the Ushinray anime time. So I think I have a way of ending nuclear war. There's a in the movie Dr. Strangelove, there's a scene where they're talking about the nuclear survival bunkers, that we need beautiful women in the nuclear survival bunkers to repopulate the world. Ladies, this is how far men will go to get to Funky Town with a beautiful woman. We'll lock you in a bunker and blow up the world. But if you're gonna repopulate the world from the nuclear survival bunkers, you really only need six guys for that, okay? And with a well-maintained sperm bank, would we need any men in the nuclear survival bunkers? I say no men in the nuclear survival bunkers. Okay, one guy to take out the trash and fix the satellite dish and, give foot massages. But once men find out we're not going to be in the nuclear survival bunkers, we'll find something else to do with our missiles. We'll keep our missiles in our silos where they belong. So that's one of my plans. You know, we should end this money that goes to nuclear war. No one should have a missile. We shouldn't be spending money. That's where all your money goes. Orwell said, the war is waged by the ruling group against its own subjects. And what he meant was that the war is unnecessary. These are unnecessary wars with the wrong countries, and we're spending this money on war, and that money is extracted. That's how the elites extract money from you, the people, that should go to housing and would have plenty of money to go around, but instead that money is in the hands of a small group of a few people, instead of spreading that money around. And that's how they do it, is with war. We spend more money on war. If we spent the same amount of money on education as we did on war, that would solve all our problems. You know, Glenn Beck and Joe Rogan and Alex Jones, they're right. The elite are the problem, but Reaganomics is not the solution to the problem. Reaganomics is the problem. We need to tax extractive industries and put that money down at the bottom, where when you put money at the bottom of an economy, that money multiplies and equalizes everyone, instead of putting all the money at the top. So, the homelessness is out of control. Every time I see somebody talking to themselves on the street corner now, I gotta look to see whether they've got one of those earphones, those little Bluetooth earphones, you know? Are you guys doing this? I think we should give homeless people free Bluetooth earphones. That way, for all I know, you're the head of a multinational corporation out there talking to yourself on the street corner. And who's more insane, the guy that drives his limo through a ghetto to penetrate the sky on a giant phallus, or the guy talking to himself on the street corner? Maybe we should give homeless people real Bluetooth earphones. They can't possibly do a worse job of managing the planet's resources. All right, so what else have I got for you? I had to come up here without redoing my notes. So again, an extractive corporate, I'm calling for a tax on multinational corporations. You know, the other thing is, the commons, rich people, Bill Gates and them, use the commons more than you and I do. That's why we had a progressive tax rate at the end of the Great Depression, because they use the services more than we do. They should pay more taxes. Bill Gates and Amazon, Jeff Bezos, they wouldn't be in business without the infrastructure that all our tax dollars pay for. And so that's why we justify taxing them more money than they tax poor people. They should have a much higher tax break. It used to be a 90% tax break. They should have much higher tax break because they use the infrastructure much more than we do. So back to my comedy routine. You know, I used to work for a fulfillment center. I won't say the name. It rhymes with Scamazon. You know, the whole warehouse is run by a machine control system called Mechanical Sensei. And you might say that people that work for Amazon, when they're raging against the machine, they're raging against an actual machine. And even Jeff Bezos, even the owner, whoever that guy is, even the owner is not immune to Mechanical Sensei. Sensei, open the penthouse elevator doors. I'm afraid we can't do that, Jeff. Sensei, open the penthouse elevator doors now. I don't think that would be good for our corporate mission, Jeff. So when I worked for Scamazon, this particular Scamazon, there were sex toys, were about 30% of the items. I was working on the conveyor belt. About 30% of the items coming down the conveyor belt were sex toys. So one day I start waving this thing around, looked like a giant butt plug. It turned out to be a tool for a plumber to plug a 6-inch pipe. Easy mistake to make, they're the same manufacturer. One day an order came down, solely consisted of a giant black dildo, a economy-sized jar of Vaseline, and a pair of pantyhose. I put my phone number in the box with a note that said, "Help, I'm being held captive at the fulfillment center." I figure whatever they're doing, it must have been better than working for the fulfillment center. You know, they used to call sex toys marital aids. I've always wanted to be in the room when they came up with this name, when they first prescribed marital aids to someone. Doctor, my wife and I are having problems. Ever since we got that new pool boy, I've had to go to the babysitter to get my knob gobbed. Is there anything you can do for us? Well, yes, what you need are marital aids. Go down to this address, get yourself some whips and chains, a ball gag, and you'll be good to go. I'm wrapping this up. What if we used marital aids for other relationship problems? Let's put Biden and Trump in a room with some marital aids for a few hours and see who the gimp is. Better yet, let's pile a bunch of marital aids on the Senate floor for a while and lock them in there for a few days. I think you'll find a lot more submissive Republicans than you might think. And, especially if you put a few corporate lobbyists in there. All right, so again, DJ Sesti for president. You can go to djsesti.com. I'm again trying to promote the Equal Rights Amendment. Call attention to the Equal Rights Amendment. Let's enact the Equal Rights Amendment. Go to DJ Sesti with three S's, SUSSD.com. Thanks very much. Thanks for your time. And thank you, event staff, for letting me do this and supporting me and helping me with my recording.
Thank you. 2 bucks. Where the hell else are you gonna get? Yes, I said Miller High Life. It's a champagne beer. It's a classy establishment. Clap it up if it's your first time here at Power Hour. Wow, I love that. That's very exciting. Couple rules to set up here, guys. You guys get 4 minutes. Light at 3. And if you haven't been here before, how it works is we have a special guest come, and they're going to come and drink a bunch of beers and get so hammered, and they're going to talk shit throughout your entire set. And you guys know my one rule, right?
Don't be a bitch.
Don't be a pussy, but close enough. Yeah, it's kind of an open up of heaven, like, but if you're cool, we'll be cool, and if you're funny, it'll go well, and if you're not funny, you'll still have a good time. You also get, if you at the end of your set, you want to go for 1 minute longer, you can do so, only if you freestyle rap. That's the one rule, okay? you guys, why don't you guys give a big round of applause to Ass to Ass, too? Before we get your drink, I want to make a special announcement. This is a very sad, but... you know, wonderful thing that I want to celebrate, and that is the leader, the guitarist, the main man, Eddie here, Mr. Eddie. It is his one of his last two performances with us here at Power Hour.
I know.
He's been with us for 2 years. You're one of the most talented guitarists in this city, so let's give it a big hand for Eddie. We love you. Thank you so much for everything you've done for us. Next week, Eddie's going to be our drinker as well, so make sure to come out. He's breaking his sobriety for his last. Okay. And now, without further ado, guys, I want you guys to welcome our wonderful mystery drinker tonight. I absolutely love her. Give it up for Victoria Flynn. Wow, the prettiest and the most polite drinker we've ever had already. How you doing, Victoria?
Good. I've got a lot of repressed rage I'm looking to tap into by the end of this evening.
Fuck yes.
Alcoholic. Anyway, lady.
Ow. Welcome to Bombay Safa, the biggest hobo jungle in the quadrant.
I've seen bigger. Oh, wait. I'm thinking of Eugene, Oregon.
Thank you.
the stars, down in the sun, step by feet, gripping fright. Three vermilion snakes, a female face, the smallest motion, will embrace. Guilty memories, fill me every we'll be right back.
We'll be right back.